Doctor, let's talk about what we've been observing in the short term. I know one of the great concerns that we all share is what the long-term effects of this brand new experimental, some would call it a gene therapy injection, is. But we've been seeing, and you and Dr. Shushar Bhakti have described short-term adverse reactions. What have we been seeing, and what is, how does that comport with some of the projections that you all were making?
Yeah, certainly. I've been working with a number of scientists and physicians. We've called ourselves, I think it's COVID, Doctors for COVID Ethics. And we've written a number of times to the European Medicines Agency. That's the agency that regulates medical products. And we noticed just through the network, we were hearing that a number of people were suffering what we would call thromboembolic disorders, so disorders of blood clots and of bleeding, oddly enough. And I was looking at some of the basic science, and with horror, I came across a number of papers that were written between 2000 and 2010 about the spike proteins on the earlier SARS virus, 2003. And I realized to my horror that the spike protein is not a passive protein that the virus uses to anchor onto a sort of docking receptor on the outside of human cells, which it uses then to enter the cell. It's not a passive protein at all. It's biologically active. Spike protein is biologically active. It can be described as fusogenic. That is, it prompts cells that it contacts to stick together, even including blood platelets. And as you probably will gather, once blood platelets start sticking together, that can be the initiation of a blood clot. And furthermore, those spike proteins are capable of initiating some of the steps of the blood coagulation pathway. So this is potentially a lethal combination. I didn't know it at the time. I came across it a couple of months ago. But you would think the vaccine manufacturers should have done their homework and checked whether or not the piece of dead virus that they were having human cells manufacture through these gene-based vaccines would not itself be harmful. But it seems to me, I can only assume they missed it. And what these vaccines all do is they encourage your body to manufacture that spike protein or part of that spike protein and stick it on the outside of a cell or release it from those cells. And so it struck me at the time that could be both an explanation for some of the thromboembolic disorders, and furthermore, you could expect that you would get some very serious cases. And let me just explain why. By contrast with traditional vaccines, where you would be given a defined dose of a dead pathogen, so you'd know how much you were getting, with these gene-based vaccines, you'll get a defined dose of it, but depending on where it lands in your body as it distributes, how efficiently it's taken up, how efficiently it's copied, how well that genetic message is translated into the spike protein, you could end up with quite different outcomes. And I believe some people were unfortunate and perhaps had a greater distribution of the vaccine into perhaps certain vulnerable vessels in their brain. And perhaps in some of those people, the vaccine was taken up well and copied efficiently. And if you furthermore imagine some of those patients were perhaps in an unstable position, they could easily be prompted to form a clot. That's all you need to hypothesize in order to explain the deaths in healthy young women aged 20 to 50 with an extremely unusual cerebral vein sinus thrombosis. But I think those side effects are occurring in other blood vessels that are moving relatively slowly. Certainly there are some in the abdomen, the so-called splanchnic vein, and any slow-moving blood vessel, if you're unlucky enough to have a disproportionately large dose land there and to be efficiently taken up and efficiently copied, now you've got an amount of the spike protein that you really don't want in the inside of your blood vessels lurking there, able to perhaps prompt the start of a serious adverse event. So it is my contention that all of the gene-based vaccines that work fundamentally like that, that they harness the body's ability to manufacture the spike protein or part of it, I think all of them should be regarded as having, to an extent, a class risk. I think you should regard all of them as having that risk. And so one of the things I've been both annoyed and furious and terrified all at the same time is there's an increasing push by government, certainly in the United Kingdom, and I know in other places, to push this vaccine down and down into the younger and younger population. And yet we know from the work of Dr. John Ioannidis and others that the strongest risk factor for becoming very ill and dying after being infected by this virus is age. So if you're younger than about 70 and you don't have any pre-existing illnesses, you're really very unlikely to die. In fact, less likely to die with this virus than influenza. So why would anybody want to give it to someone under 50 who's well, or under 40 who's well, or under 30 who's well? And I'm afraid my government is hell-bent on vaccinating everybody from the age of 18 and over. And at the same time, I think it's briefly paused, but there is an ongoing pediatric study as well. And of course, that why would they do that? It's because they want to vaccinate all the children as well. And I put it to you and any listener, can you think of a benign explanation for why you would want to give an experimental use authorized gene-based vaccine to millions, tens of millions of people who cannot possibly die if they ran into this virus? And the answer is no, you can't, can you? So if you can't think of a benign explanation for what's happening, and remember, it's not the only bad thing that's happening, you have to start looking for malign explanations. And I think I've come across what it is, and it's this damn vaccine passport. Now, there's a lot of talk about vaccine passports, and they're just nonsense. Let me just explain. If you're a vulnerable person and you've chosen to be vaccinated, and all has gone well, and it will in most cases, you are now protected. You do not need to know the immune status of anyone around you in a football game or a theater or a shop. You wouldn't benefit from the presence of a vaccine passport in the hands of anyone around you because you're protected by your vaccination. If, on the other hand, you've chosen not to be vaccinated because you're young and healthy and you've looked at the statistics and you're not at risk from the virus, you don't need to know anyone else's immune status either. You don't need to see their vaccine passport. So neither the vaccinated nor the unvaccinated benefit at all from vaccine passports. But I can tell you who will benefit: the people who are pushing it on you. And guess what? If vaccine passports come into being, there will be the world's first common format digital ID for every person on the planet, and at least one editable health-related flag, which will be, is your vaccine passport valid or not? And then whoever controls that database can set the algorithm to allow someone who's got a valid vaccine passport to cross a boundary, like an international border, or getting into a shop or a sports game, and it will prohibit people who don't have that from doing those things. I've just explained to you that it doesn't benefit any of the people, but it definitely benefits the totalitarian controllers who have that database. It's never been like this in the world before, and I believe if it goes live, we'll not only be standing at the gates of hell, we'll just be given a little push and in we'll go. Because once you're on this system and your whole life is permissioned by your status on this system, have you got a valid vaccine or not, then you can be made to do absolutely anything. So let me just imagine this situation. 6 months' time, your vaccine passport app pings, and there's a message there that says, Dr. Yeadon, it's time to come down for your top-up vaccine, which we'll talk about in a minute. And there's another little ping, and it says, and please bring your 10-year-old grandchild down. We've noticed they've not been vaccinated. The final comment will be, just need to let you know, if you don't comply with these two requirements, within 3 weeks, your vaccine passport will expire and you'll be excluded from your life and all parts of your life. So you might think that you wouldn't let your grandchild be vaccinated, but I've just told you, I've shown you, if you let this damn thing go live, you'll be coerced into doing it. You'll have no way out. You will have to comply. And then why would you want to top up vaccine? This is the thing that really catalyzed my recent series of interviews. I know as an immunologist, I would say one of my strongest suits is immunology. And I'm absolutely confident that all the stories they are telling you around the world about variants is a lie. It's a complete fraud. And I can exemplify. So we're all being told about variants, the Brazilian, the Kent, South African, and so on. I just ask people just to take a deep breath. Recognize this is it's a big virus. It consists of what's called amino acids, 10,000 of them in strings, and then they're all folded up to form the characteristic shape that you know and hate. If you go and look for the virus that is most different from the one originally sequenced in Wuhan about 16 months ago, you will find that the most different variant is only 0.3% different. So it's 99.7% identical. They're all of them 99.7% identical to the original. And you might be thinking, that doesn't sound like enough to escape the human immune system. And you're right, it's not, and I can prove it, that the 2003 SARS virus is related to SARS-CoV-2. They differ by about 20%, 20. So about 80 times as much variation between those two viruses and any of the variants of the current one. And I can assure you that when immunology researchers found scores of people who'd been infected by SARS in 2003, they took blood samples from these volunteers. They confirmed two important things. One, all of the survivors still had really good immune memory to the virus they'd encountered 17 years ago, which is what you'd expect. But what was wonderful is they all also possessed what's called cross immunity. That is, their immune system recognized the new virus. And I'm not surprised. The human immune system essentially takes multiple pictures of any pathogen that it encounters, often between 15 and 30 pictures. And basically, none of the variants change more than a couple of those pictures. So when you encounter the variant, having been immunized by infection or vaccination, it's impossible. It's not just implausible, it's impossible that your body doesn't recognize that variant as something it's seen before. So your governments are lying to you. And in my case, United Kingdom has closed the border effectively, really restricted international travel. And the reason they give is because of these variants, which I know for certain is a lie. They're not a problem at all. But furthermore, what's absolutely terrifying is two further bits of information which I want your viewers and listeners to hear. The pharmaceutical industry is already manufacturing so-called top-up or variant vaccines. Now, if I'm right, and they're not these variants aren't different enough to warrant a different vaccine, and they are not, what is it that they're manufacturing? I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm actually terrified. And then when I give you one last piece of information, a few weeks ago, the world's medicines regulators, including the FDA, European Medicines Agency, and their sibling in Japan, and they issued a statement that said that the variant or top-up vaccines are so similar to the parent vaccines from which they were derived, we will not require the drug companies to run any clinical safety studies on them. So yes, you've got that right. If the drug company designs a vaccine on a computer, it'll go straight to manufacturing. And as long as it meets manufacturing quality standards, it can then be injected into the arms of hundreds of millions or even billions of people. And remember what I said about the vaccine passports. Once they're up and running, once it tells you to do something on pain of losing the validity of your vaccine passport, you will comply. Now, if you wanted to really...
go ahead.
Yeah, if you wanted to be really terrified, since it's not my crime, I don't know why they're manufacturing top-up vaccines, and so I don't know what their intent is in injecting you. But you don't need a particularly vivid imagination to think that since so much of this crisis has been malign and there is no benign interpretation of what's going on, it certainly has the potential to be a very harmful event.
What should people do? when they're confronted with this pressure, and there's enormous pressure all over the world, it's not obviously just in the UK or America, it's everywhere, there's enormous pressure to take this vaccine. As you say, the there's the looming passport. It's already been instituted in Israel.
Yes.
What should people do? What's the best response? How can we resist this?
Well, it's not any harder than it sounds. Actually, it's to say thank you very much for your generous offer of a free vaccine. But for my own reasons, I've decided to decline and do not engage in debate with them. You don't need to explain your decision. You're a sovereign human being. You decide what goes into your body or not. So just say thanks very much, but I'm declining. And do not engage them in discussions. Even if they insist, you'll say, look, I've made my decision. Thank you very much. And then the other thing that must be done is to prevent the vaccine passport system coming into being. You're being told that it's necessary to regain confidence. But I've just explained that if you're vaccinated, you're protected. And if you have chosen not to be vaccinated, you don't need to know. So no one needs to know anybody else's immune status. There's no benign reason for it to come in. I think we could easily recover our confidence, frankly, just by being told the truth. That's what's needed, not some ghastly, nightmarish totalitarian control system, because I'm afraid that's what it'll be. I actually think that was always the objective. So legislators, if you're listening, or people who know people who are legislators, I'm afraid, get on their case. Explain to them that there are no advantages. Don't let them fool you into, it'll only be a temporary measure. What, like income tax? Once it starts, there's no recovery from it. And I've just explained, I've given you examples that if you're asked to do anything at all for yourself or in relation to your children and grandchildren, if you're told, if you don't comply, we will henceforth turn off the validity of your vaccine passport. Say you won't be able to go to the shops anymore. Eventually, you might not be able to buy gasoline or leave your house. Whatever the rules the controllers set, you will then be coerced into doing whatever they tell you. Is that really what you wanted? If not, you better start demonstrating, because single individuals like me can do nothing. I can warn you and explain how much danger we're in, but you behind the camera, you watching, if you don't do something, these criminals are going to steal liberal democracy and freedom forever.